Welcome to the WFO Life Podcast. Buckle up for interviews, insights, and practical discussions, and the occasional intellectual oddity, all designed to help you master self, master craft, and accomplish any life mission. Good evening, and welcome back to the WFO Life Podcast. Chris, how are you tonight?
Doing great. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms and grandmoms out there. It's a great day, 2021. Things opening back up, so it's a lot better Mother's Day this year than last year, I think.
Yeah, 100%. I did the same at our house. We had my obviously my wife, my mother, in-laws, got to have all my daughters here. It was a great day. So yeah, definitely happy Mother's Day to all of you out there. So we got an interesting topic today, and this will probably fall when you sent me the link, and I thought, okay, we're going to talk about this, and where are we going with this topic? I guess to set it up, I thought it would probably fall under intellectual oddity, but I think if you'll give us a moment to unpack this, I think there's some interesting things to cover and certainly interesting angles that can be taken on this topic. So I'll let you run with the article that triggered this.
For sure. So I'll start out with, just at the beginning, something that piqued my interest. So it says weightlifter Laurel Hubbard may be the most controversial competitor in Olympic history if she steps onto the mat in Tokyo. Her two silver medals in 2017 World Championships in the United States immediately raised questions about the fairness of a biological male competing against biological females in a sport in which strength is everything. But becoming the first transgender Olympian after a rule change allowing her to compete would be just the latest twist in her fascinating life story. So we begin there.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. When I first heard you sent this over, so you wanted to do a topic on it. I thought, where are we going with this? what's going on here? But there's several interesting factors in play here, and obviously the transgender angle to competing in sports and stuff is something that itself is a whole ball of wax, right? But yep. There's also other angles. You mentioned, I think the article mentioned their age of the athlete as well.
Yeah, so that's there's so many interesting angles to this, and so controversial on the face value, but I think there's a lot we can unpack. But yeah, so Laurel is in her 40s and competed as a weightlifter up into her 20s as a male, transitioned to a female in her 30s, and then in her 40s started to try to compete after transitioning completely to a woman at international level. So a lot of twists and turns that I think the beginning of that story alluded to, being in their 40s, trying to compete at an international level, difficult. And then obviously with some of the other potential, equal opportunity challenges from both sides. I mean, obviously, if you look at it from, her perspective, wants equal opportunity. I'm a female now. I want to compete as a female at the highest level. Kudos to her for doing that. And then, obviously the biological females, their perspective on competing with somebody that, lived for 35 years as a male. And, we can, discuss more of that. But, trying to be, I guess, open-minded about, things like this as more – it comes up more often. But, in sports that – like weightlifting or wrestling and others that require a lot of physical strength, I think it becomes, more of a question from the biological female side on, whether or not it's a fair playing field.
Yeah. So the more I started unpacking this in my head, the age thing popped into my mind first. So if you just look at the average 40-year-old athlete, there are very few people that are trying to compete at an elite level. Mm-hmm. And that is something that just by itself, usually favors the youth, right? And yeah. So these people that are winning championships, maybe in powerlifting, I may be wrong about that. I seem to recall that, some powerlifters, maybe stronger in their 30s, but still over 40, you would think you're generally male or female are going to start losing some power, some hormone, and the ability to train without injuries and things like that. It just the older we get, recovery from injury and our ability to push because of decreasing growth hormones and things like that is certainly impaired. So I think, you know, from the WFO Live standpoint, I look at – I hear this story to start with and I think, okay, on from the athlete's perspective, gender aside to start with, just age alone, this is someone who's out there pushing. They're pushing, you know, they're pushing boundaries in more ways than one, and they're certainly trying to turn back the clock and compete at a very high level. Now, the flip side of that is what you mentioned about, you know, being, you know, essentially a male for 35 years. How much of that plays into the athlete's ability to perform? How much did that play a role in the athlete's, you know, development to this point? Because strength doesn't just come overnight. It doesn't just come in a, you know, a few months. That strength comes from years of one hormone makeup. And so I think while on one hand I see the athlete's perspective of, you know, facing challenges and they're sort of trying to overcome obstacles and they're trying to live out their, you know, their true self, if you will. But at the same time, there's that whole other flip side of it. Like, who are they competing against?
I think the most difficult thing about this is there's fairness, I guess, challenges on both sides, right? Because, right. I mean, especially in the international stage, I mean, when you go to states and college, you know, collegiate level, I mean, it's depends on the conference. It depends on the state, on whether or not they say, hey, you have to compete as your born biological gender or sex, or you know, in some college and in this case international, it says, you know, I mean, there's some pretty invasive things, as you can imagine, on the international level, to make sure, I guess, that, you know, you're serious and not just some guy that decided, hey, I'm going to compete as a female for various reasons. I mean, there has to be verified medical, you know, tests, and to include like testosterone tests for a year prior to international competition. So there are like, you know, not just anybody can wake up in the morning and decide, hey, I want to, you know, compete as a female. So, I mean, there are, you know, protections on that side. On the flip side, it's like, you know, when you think about it, especially a lot of these sports that require a lot of physical strength and things like that, it says considerations, I guess, is, you know, if you look at it on the flip side, so if a girl switched genders and was going to compete, you know, there's
like,
really no,
like,
there's
as a
not,
male.
Yeah, yeah. So there's not much, there's not many sports where there's a competitive advantage like built in where there's a question, right? But if a boy identifies as a girl and then competes on a lot of different, you know, playing fields, you know, then that person is going to have a competitive advantage. And so I think that's where, you know, whether real or perceived, that's the flip side, right? You know, I've been competing all my life. I was born a girl, you know, grew into a woman, got to be, you know, internationally competitive, and all of a sudden these people can come in that had, you know, in this case, 35 years of the hormone that makes you stronger, the hormone that makes your bones more dense, the hormone that, you know, gives you narrower hips and all these things that typically are better to, you know, compete in, you know, sports that have strength and power, you know, components to it. So yeah, there's definitely two different sides to that coin. I can see a little bit of both sides of it, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, I guess culturally, it seems like in about the last 10 years, the gender identity has come up over and over and over, and people are, I guess, you know, no matter where you come down on the positionally, I guess, about that culturally, what the interesting thing to me is how much we're talking about this and how it's just sort of being pushed through society right now. The fact that, I mean, it just seems, and when I grew up 30, 40 years ago, there were boys and there were girls and they competed in those arenas. And that is very clear. And we now know that there are people that are really sort of genetically in between. And and there are people that there are women with very, very masculine hormone makeups and vice versa. And so what's interesting to me is it's come, you know, so far now that it becomes such a hot button topic and it's so controversial. And I'm actually kind of glad you brought this, you know, topic. I mean, I thought when I first heard it, I thought this is going to be challenging to talk about. But I think we need to talk about people that are facing obstacles and doing things from a, you know, that are living out their own passion. This is an extreme example of that, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I was going to say, besides my own personal opinions, or, you know, just like anybody, the biases that we come to the table with, I was thinking that, you know, trying to, I guess, put yourself in both side shoes and assume that they're genuine. And like you were saying earlier, that, you know, somebody's trying to push themselves and compete and, you know, live their life, you know, as a, as another gender after having been the opposite gender for 35 years. I mean, you know, I mean, you sympathize with that person that they're obviously having to train and push themselves and do things. And in this case, into their 40s, you know, like you were saying, not too many people are trying to even, you know, compete at the, you know, the local level in, you know, local events and, you know, well into their, you know, mid 40s. I can really only think of a few events that, you know, there's some mixed martial artists and boxers, you know, maybe even some elite marathoners that have competed pretty well into their late 30s, early 40s. But it's typically an anomaly that somebody is going to be or even try to be that competitive at that age. So, I mean, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. They're being, you know, competitive, and that we can learn a lot of lessons from that. But you know, that doesn't, you know, take away, you know, the other side where people, you know, you're a 25-year-old female that, you know, was doing pretty well. And then, you know, and I haven't looked at the details. I didn't want to dig too much because it's hard to find an article that's objective on things like this, you know? And so I'm not even sure if this person, Laurel, is going to be blowing, you know, the females out of the water, or because, like you were saying, I mean, even competing with high level 25-year-old females, if you're in your 40s, you know, it's, you know, she's probably not a shoe-in to, you know, get a medal either. So, you know.
No, and actually back up and let's talk about if this is a true transgender athlete going from male to female, whether they've had, you know, changes in their gender, you know, physically, most of the time they'll undergo hormonal therapy.
Yeah.
And the hormonal therapy designed to take away masculine features and block testosterone. So they're typically on hormone management to do that. And that's exactly opposite of what it would take. I mean, most athletes that are power lifters and in strength sports, I mean, testosterone's whether you're male or female, testosterone is a prized hormone. And so that actually, to me, makes this also interesting from a medical perspective, just talking about this story, because, I mean, you're talking about somebody that's taking away the primary hormone for strength and also for repair and recovery. In a genetically male athlete, which, you know, that, you know, talk about injury, talk about, you know, the ability to recover, and talk about the ability to perform. I think that's extremely interesting from its own perspective. But you brought up something, and that's why we talked about this. It's just like it's the intellectual oddity of it to just discuss this from different angles. But one of the things you're talking about, I mean, I would like to paint the picture with Laurel that this is an athlete that is living their life wide open. Why, you know, WFO life, right? This is a person who's at their age and with a gender change. This cannot be something that's, I don't imagine this person's having a, it's not fun for them, I'd imagine.
No.
This is probably very controversial and it's very stressful. And you know, no one wants to be criticized. And I guarantee you, in this day and age, with as controversial as transgender has been, this whole culturally, this whole topic, I guarantee you this person's getting, you know, the hate mail or whatever, right? You know, and then there's people that, you know, just like I laid out, I said, well, you know, when I grew up, there was men's sports and women's sports, right?
Yeah.
And I guess what I'm getting at, however, is that even though this is a WFO life kind of person who's out there trying to make the most of things and trying to live out their passions, there's an interesting angle to this. And that is if we look at it from the perspective of the other athletes competing that don't maybe have those physical advantages of, you know, genetic masculinity or testosterone and things like that, I think what struck me is that this person's goal and everything they're trying to do is also impacting other people.
Yeah.
It's like, what if you were a world record holder in the, you know, three lifts or the deadlift or whatever as a female, and then you have a transgender athlete come in and manage to pull off a new record? The question then becomes, what is that? Is that a record with an asterisk and we all just compete in the same, you know, area? Or is it always going to be, well, but that's an asterisk? You know, what does that mean? I think that's what's interesting to me is like it does – someone living out their passions, I have 100% support for that. And regardless of, for sure. You know, how strange that seems to most people. However, when it impacts other people or their accomplishments, then, you know, that starts to impact others. And I think that's what makes this a unique situation.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, in this case, you know, maybe we can link a few things about the story in the show notes that we can look up about the details of, you know, what Laurel's lifts are like compared to the top females. But I think from, I guess, the biological female's perspective, I think it becomes even more challenging when you have, like, a 25-year-old male at the top of his, you know, physical peak.
Right.
That decides the transition in their 20s and then, you know, does all the medical and the testosterone testing in time to compete. And then, like you were saying, I mean, I think it's feasible that even with the lower testosterone requirements, because of, you know, how much, you know, benefit they've had up to that point in their life, and they're still in their, you know, physiological peak at that point, you know, to come in the first meet, blow away world records. And so I think that you can fast forward, you know, this what we're talking about today, this case may not be as controversial if, you know, the person makes the Olympics and doesn't do that well or doesn't blow away the records. Then it's just kind of a interesting story and, you know, something to talk about, like where we are right now, because it happens, I think, at every level, right? I mean, there's been stories in high school and in college and things like that. But yeah, I think, like you were saying, if all things considered and everybody's in their like peak time and they start blowing away records and winning gold medals, then I think that's where, you know, the anger starts to boil up when you're like in your mid 20s and, you know, competing with all these, you know, assumptions in your head and targets you have to meet, and somebody comes in that, you know, naturally has 40%, you know, greater muscle mass, you know, than a female. And there were some like links in the story, I think, and it talks about they have done some tests, and, you know, it says that, you know, even after, you know, 2 years of testosterone suppression, there's like bone mass, you know, preservation from all the years of being a male, and, you know, males have a stronger grip strength. And so there's things that you're not going to lose, you know, or not going to lose anytime soon.
Right.
From all those years being, you know, the advantage of having, you know, testosterone in your system. It doesn't just go away with a year of low testosterone tests, you know, and other things. So I think that, you know, I mean, I see both sides from a personal level where, like you were saying, you know, you can't fault anybody for saying, hey, you know, what, you know, me becoming a female may or may not have anything to do with me wanting to be a competitive athlete, and I shouldn't be, you know, penalized. And then by the flip side, you know, the same thing, the biological females are like, hey, it's unfair playing field in sports that require, you know, muscle mass and bone density and things that, you know, I can't compete because I didn't have puberty as a male, you know, and that's not going to ever go away for that person, you know. So
yeah. And since you opened this rabbit hole, this whole topic, There's more layers to this, and this is why we have these kind of you know conversations. There are more layers to this. Now think about the Ben Johnsons of the world,
yeah.
The guys that got busted, or who was the cyclist?
Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Okay, look now. Okay, doping, blood doping, testosterone analogs, all these things that these cyclists, they say half the cyclists that have won, you know, Tour de France have all been on doping and, you know, testosterone and things like that. But think about this. There's all these rules about doping, and there's been athletes that have been, you know, just multi-million-dollar athletes that have lost their careers, lost their world's records,
yeah,
because they played with doping and trying to enhance their hormone. You know, that's just another layer of this. It's like, okay, if that on one side, if athletes are, you know, they're pushing or trying to, the, you know, Canseco's of the world or whatever, they're trying to recover from their injuries and they're getting put on hormones, but that's an unfair advantage. Man, where does all this go together? You know what I'm saying? It's just so messy.
Yeah.
And you know, to mix all of this together, I, in my mind, I don't know. You know, I race. I guess people know because of one of our prior episodes, I talked about my drag racing on the side. You know, I race cars, and there's classes for every type of car, right? Mm-hmm. There's like a stock class, and then there's a modified class. Then there's this – they always have like the street outlaw, you know, the ultra modified, whatever, anything goes kind of mm-hmm. class. And I kind of wonder maybe where all this is going at some point is that maybe they have – something where if an athlete wants to use hormones and, you know, I'm making the presumption that some of this could be done safely, right?
Yeah.
But if maybe you just have a class that you just sign up and say, I'm an athlete that is in this class. I would rather use enhancing hormones for my, so that I can perform better. I can recover better, whatever the reason is, it's there, right? Oh, then maybe there's just another category for folks that have changed gender. Why not? If they're identifying that way, and you know, I don't know if that's insensitive that you would say, no, I'm actually a female now. You know, it's either A or B.
Yeah.
Well, why can't there be an in between so that it doesn't impact people that didn't make that decision? You know, they didn't want to have that decision imposed.
Yeah, it's not so much discriminatory. It's just protective of everybody that's in another category. You know, that's
yeah, like, and it also lets them compete and be who they want to be socially and you know, physically and everything else. It's just it's also respectful for the fact that people are different. You know, and hormones matter. And genetics matter, and how our genetics respond to the world nutritionally, through the physical activity we take, every action we take, our genetics have to interface with the rest of the world. And if you're genetically male but have undergone hormone manipulation or transgender procedures, that's still you still have a genetic profile that's going to make you interact with the world maybe as a male. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I guess the more I go around and around with this and unpack it and pull the layers away, I start thinking about this whole, you know, the doping thing is such a hot button topic. You know, I mean, gosh, yeah. I mean, when I was an athlete in college, I got drug tested twice. And I'm not even – I wasn't one of the top guys on the team, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's guys – you know, but I got tested twice in 1 week one time.
Yeah.
Just because they were just – you know, they were just – that's what they do. They try to make
it's
random.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's random. And I just remember thinking, wow, you know, this is why am I getting tested so often? But the reality is it's a huge deal. I mean, people have lost – athletes have lost millions of dollars over this situation. And I think that it's like a layer, you know, of onion that we're peeling back on this topic. I get more and more – you know, every time you mention something about this, I think of mm-hmm. more examples of how any time you're dealing with hormones – and you're, you know, it's so, there's no way. I mean, even the hormones change day to day. I mean, you know, day to day, depending on your athletic level, depending on what you're doing, they change. I mean, it's so difficult to splice and dice this and say, oh, you're definitely going to compete here and you're going to compete there. Oh, man.
Yeah.
What a wild topic.
Well, I was going to say, and I think, I guess the great beyond is when you have sports that are traditionally, you know, male dominant that are physical, you know, like team sports or even, you know, sports like wrestling or boxing. You know, there's international boxing for females. You know, boxing, I believe, is still an Olympic sport, you know, most years. And so I think that when you talk about a level playing field, that we both agree that, you know, if somebody, the rules allow it, and the person, you know, meets the criteria, you know, they should be able to compete. But then,
right.
But then there's ethical concerns when you talk about wrestling, boxing, or even like basketball, something. I mean, you think about, you know, the average height and vertical jump and, you know, physicality of a male, even Division I college player. I mean, if they transitioned and then became, you know, an Olympian on the USA basketball team and they become unstoppable in international play, you know, then, you know, where does that lead us? Right. So I think that,
right.
I mean, I think as they get, I mean, weightlifting, obviously, there's physicality, but there's not one-on-one competition with like a, you know, where you're like knocking, you know, into a biological female, you know. And I think a lot of people,
yeah.
especially a lot of, you know, Western sensitivities, if you will, probably wouldn't look kindly upon that. But like we said earlier, if the rules say, hey, if your testosterone's below a certain level for 12 months prior, if you have like a medical screening that shows, hey, you're verified to be now a physical and biological female, then, it is what it is. So I think that there's a lot to unpack here, and I think it's just going to tip the iceberg when we talk about weightlifting, because, people who've had, gender identity challenges have existed for a long time, and now it's just coming to light more. And if the rules allow it, then, we're going to have to probably decide how we best deal with it and try to have kind of equal opportunity across the board without, violating too many ethical concerns. So it's definitely interesting to chat about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you bringing it up. Again, I was a bit apprehensive when we started this topic, because I thought, where are we going to go with this? But then the more I, read the article and I thought about this, there are just so many different aspects of it, and I get hats off to Laurel for competing and doing what she believes in. At the same time, looking at it, where does that leave us with the sport? Where does that – everyone that also has competed in the sport, how does that affect them? Mm-hmm. And I think these are the things that we've got to consider, moving forward, and these are the things that make this such a controversial topic. And I don't know, maybe we made it more complicated than it is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think that it would be interesting to get some feedback on this from some of our listeners. Maybe this, sparked the conversation. I think there's the more I was writing notes, and the more we talk about this, I keep coming up with different angles and stuff. But from our perspective at the WFO Life podcast, I think that, anyone that's, pushing the boundaries at 43 years old physically and trying to live out their dreams and stuff, hats off to them. And I say all good. But at the same time, for the folks that are out there and they're, they've also maybe they're, female athlete that's, been working their whole lives, but don't have that genetic advantage, if you will, for certainly a power sport. I can certainly see their perspective as well. And I just kind of, we just open that thought and see what other folks think about that.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll, before we post the website, article about topic, maybe I can find some fellow competitors that were biological females and see if any of them, it's difficult. I mean, because if you speak out on it and you're speaking just as an athlete, you're not making a value judgment on that person, but you're like, hey, right. I'm just talking about an athlete competing against another athlete, just to hear their perspective on it. Maybe they're open to it, maybe they're defensive about it, I'll try to see if I can find, something from that perspective, because I think that would, shed good light on this topic. So,
yeah, that would be interesting. Hey, before we wrap up, I wanted to kind of leave kind of a little prelude to some things I've been thinking about, and I hope that will be a series of episodes that we do. You did something a little bit on mindfulness a little while back, and I have been reading – my latest reading has been on the topic of mindfulness, and I've got an entire series I would like to do on, how to build mindfulness into your life, and also the various physical and mental and emotional – benefits of that. So I wanted to throw that out, that in the coming weeks, I've got a series of those that we're going to pull together. And I think that's going to be I hope people will look for that topic, because I'm convinced as a physician that half the struggles and woes and physical ailments that we deal with are because of our inability to quiet our mind and prepare ourselves for the day without constant interruptions. And your little topic you did a little while back, you really prompted me to want to do a bigger series on that. So I hope you'll join me in that. I'll share some of my notes with you. And I think our listeners are really going to get a lot out of that topic.
Yeah, no doubt. Looking forward, interacting, and hopefully in the coming year, maybe we can arrange something where some of our more, I guess, involved listeners and people on the Future Focus Health Network and the WFO tribe, maybe we can have a in-person get together there in South Texas and share some ideas.
Definitely don't see any reason that can't happen, so we'll start planning it.
Yep, sounds good.
Chris, good topic. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Al.